JoJo, and you're watching Be Inside TV. I never thought Corona could be such a nasty bitch. But now that she's here, boy, all I want is for you to use common sense. Stay in right now. Do it for humanity. I'm dead ass about that, but we will survive. I'm your host, Shawnee Harris, and thank you for listening to the Be Inside TV podcast. In part two of our conversation, Rose McGowan talks about the sexual misconduct allegations against Joe Biden, his accuser, Tara Reid, her current relationship with her former Charmed co-star Alyssa Milano, Oscar winner Quentin Tarantino, and a possible revelation from Uma Thurman.
Harvey Weinstein's Walk of Shame.
Okay, here we go.
The former Hollywood heavyweight led out in handcuffs by police.
Are you sorry, Harvey?
The disgraced movie producer turning himself in.
Any comment, Harvey?
Now officially charged with the rape and sexual assault of two women in New York City. The shockwaves from Weinstein's fall from grace have reverberated around the world. The 66-year-old has been largely considered public enemy number one in the Me Too movement, accused by more than 90 women of sexual misconduct, harassment, assault, even rape. Today, marking the first criminal charges against him.
He is a sociopath. He may or may not believe he's ever done anything wrong.
Rose McGowan is one of them.
What was your reaction when you saw him in handcuffs?
It's a very complex feeling because for the initial moment, you see the sad sack of a person shuffling. And you think, oh. And then you remember, and he must be stopped, and it's a good thing.
For someone who's never met Harvey Weinstein, how would you describe him?
He's a monster. He looks like a monster, and he is a monster. Some people get the faces they deserve.
This isn't her case, but McGowan says it may bring her and all those other women some sense of justice.
Did you ever think that this day would come?
I wish I could say I did think this day was going to come, but I didn't. I didn't believe it would. And I'm so grateful that it has.
The Manhattan District Attorney has been investigating these new cases against Weinstein for months. He appeared in court
grand jury notice
as the charges against him were read out loud.
Rape, first degree, criminal sexual act,
pale, somber, and still handcuffed, he listened to some of the details of the case against him.
This defendant used his position, money, and power to lure young women into situations where he was able to violate them sexually. Our investigation is ongoing, and we have encouraged other survivors to come forward.
The charges involve an unnamed woman who accuses Weinstein of raping her at a hotel in Midtown Manhattan in 2013. And former actress Lucia Evans, who says Weinstein overpowered her during a business meeting back in 2004 and forced her to perform oral sex on him. Evans explained her decision to press charges to The New Yorker. At a certain point, you have to think about the greater good of humanity, of womankind. Today, the movie mogul surrendered his passport and posted $1 million cash bond.
You understand that?
He's out of jail, but under GPS monitoring.
Mr. Weinstein will enter a plea of not guilty. Mr. Weinstein has always maintained that any sexual activity he engaged in was consensual.
Weinstein's attorney, Benjamin Braffman, says he'll file a motion to dismiss the charges against his client, saying there's not enough evidence.
Mr. Weinstein did not invent the casting couch in Hollywood, and to the extent that there is bad behavior in that industry, that is not what this is about.
It's absurd. Casting couch, that's a nice little euphemism for the boss is gonna rape you.
McGowan says Weinstein raped her 21 years ago. Earlier this year, she sat down with our own Juju Chang, sharing her story.
What was your impression when you first met?
I thought he was a warthog from hell. I thought he was terrifying looking.
McGowan says the assault happened during a business meeting in his hotel suite. The then 23-year-old said the initial meeting went well, but as she was leaving, she says Weinstein pushed her into the bathroom, took her clothes off, and forced oral sex on her. She shared the details in her biography, Brave.
You write, you detached from my body. I hover up under the ceiling, watching myself sitting on the edge of the tub against a wall. held in place by the monster, whose face is between my legs, trapped by a beast. Those are your, that's...
A nightmare. Literally a nightmare. But it was consensual, right? I don't know about you, but when you've had consensual sex, you don't really fill up with tears afterwards.
At the time of our report, an attorney for Weinstein said that he denies her allegations of non-consensual sexual contact, and it is erroneous and irresponsible to conflate claims of inappropriate behavior and consensual sexual contact later regretted with an untrue claim of rape. McGowan reached a settlement with Weinstein for $100,000 in August of 1997. A copy of it was posted here on The New Yorker. In exchange, she would not pursue legal action against him. She says that settlement did not include a confidentiality agreement.
This case is obviously not your case, but do you feel that he'll still be able to be held accountable for what he did to you indirectly?
Because our stories are all so similar, I think one win will be for all of us.
Weinstein's other alleged victims agree. We were with Catherine Kendall, one of his accusers from the 90s, as she watched him walking in handcuffs for the first time.
I don't think I really expected it, but it's so right. It's so unbelievably right.
She hopes it's the first step in a march toward justice.
I don't think that it's fair that just because, you know, you're a famous Hollywood producer and you have lots of money that you don't have to serve time. Rape is rape. No matter who does it, and it's a crime. So yeah, he needs to pay.
Kendall says the former studio executive undressed during a business meeting and tried to get her to massage him. She says she got away, but kept it a secret until last fall.
I was afraid that if I spoke, the only person that was going to get hurt was me, not him. He has everyone protecting him. He's got the money. He's got, you know, the people making movies, whoever it is, the power.
Kendall, like most of Weinstein's accusers, will never get her day in court. The statute of limitations has expired. But the similarities in their stories could mean they may testify this time.
When it can prove that the person had effectively a modus operandi, that this is the way he did things, and by those other women coming forward, it can help prove that this happened.
If they ask you to testify, would you?
I would absolutely testify. Over and over, I will sing it to the heavens.
Weinstein's attorney insists his client will be victorious.
I anticipate that the women who have made these allegations, when subjected to cross-examination, in the event we even get that far, that the charges will not be believed by 12 people, assuming we get 12 fair people who are not consumed by the movement that seems to have overtaken this case.
This isn't the first time officials considered prosecuting the Hollywood power player. The NYPD was investigating a case against him in 2015. Robert Boyce was the chief of detectives.
Let's go back to the beginning when you first heard Harvey Weinstein's name mentioned in an investigative fashion.
So that was March of 2015 when we had a case where he forcibly touched the young lady down in Tribeca.
The New Yorker uncovered an audio recording of a conversation between that woman, model Ambra Batalana Gutierrez, and Weinstein. The tape was part of a police sting operation.
And if you want to leave when the guy comes with my jacket,
why yesterday you touch my breast?
Oh, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
But you're used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on. Sit here.
That case was never prosecuted. The DA's office saying the audio was insufficient to prove a crime under New York law.
Why do you think the DA's office didn't press charges back when they even had audio files?
We had probable cause of the arrest. We had an admission of guilt on a tape. We felt it was a good case. Why they didn't is somewhere in their realm, not mine.
Boyce was also part of the investigation into the current case against Weinstein.
Did the two women require some persuasion?
I wouldn't call it persuasion. I would call it support. That's what I would say. Support is because it's something that will change their lives, and they know that.
If convicted in this case, Weinstein faces up to 25 years in prison.
I want to play for you earlier this year when you were interviewed by Juju.
What does justice look like to you?
Bars. This man should be behind bars for the rest of his life. He has stolen. He has hijacked. He has smeared. He has lied. He has purchased. He has done diabolical things in the name of being able to stick his face between women's legs and literally eat their essence. It's chilling and it's real.
How do you feel looking at that, and what does justice look like now?
We're getting closer to justice. Bars. Because we had invisible bars around us for so long. We didn't get to have a life, not the one we thought we were going to have. Not just careers, but lives. Freedom. Freedom from nightmares. Freedom from body flashbacks. And I think I stand by my original statement. That is exactly what I think it should be, and we're one step closer, a big step closer today.
For now, McGowan says she plans to face Weinstein again in court, vowing to go to watch the trial if it happens.
I have faith that 12 people will look at him and say guilty.
Will you be there?
Damn right I'll be there. Yeah.
And her message to those two women pressing charges?
I would like to thank Lucia Evans for her bravery. Nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to go out and take the hits that she's going to be taking. Nobody wants to have to defend themselves after being attacked. That's double attack. I stand with her. I send her all the strength, and to the other unnamed woman. And I'm so sorry. I couldn't stop it earlier. I really tried.
What's behind your tears right now? Is this frustration, anger, joy?
Sometimes I get sad for who I was. I miss that girl. And when I talk about him, I think of her. And I think about all of us and who we were. But I am, despite what I look like, I'm really happy today. Yeah. This is for all of us.
For Nightline, I'm Lindsay Davis in New York.
I don't want to presume to speak on behalf of other people, but I know certain things quite intimately and deeply. And I also cultivated, you know, one of the reasons I did Charmed is because I joined when it was already a hit. And I knew when it came time to strike Weinstein, I would have a global audience. I just had to wait and wait and wait and just keep my nose to the grindstone and work and gather data and gather information. It was kind of like deep undercover work. I got lost for a while. But when I found my way out of the Hollywood cult, you know, it was really freeing, and freeing that, okay, yeah, I had to sell my house to pay lawyers to fight Harvey Weinstein. I had to leave everything I knew and had. I had to give up my career. I had to do all that. Is truth and a cultural reset and getting society to be better, is that more important to me than my house and my belongings and my art? And the answer is yes. And I know for a lot of people, it's not the answer. I might just be a little strange that way. I don't know. I know I'm different because, there's somebody from the Black Lives Matter movement that told me once, they're like, the reason they don't like you is because you don't behave like a white woman is supposed to behave. And I don't know about that, but I guess not, because I don't see a lot of other people, you know, with the same, and if not a much bigger platform than me, going hard and telling the truth. And so it's just kind of volunteer work. Mm-hmm.
And Ronan Farrow uncovered a lot of the tactics that Harvey Weinstein used against you. How did you feel when he was able to uncover that amount of evidence about the lengths that he went to silence you in Hollywood?
It made everything make sense, because for the longest time, and it's especially in America. America has a very skewed idea of who I am, but they don't quite understand it's because he paid off journalists for two decades to slander me, paint me as crazy, a drug addict, a whore, you know, home wrecker, all that, just that kind of tawdry stuff they do to every woman or anybody that tries to come forward, basically. It's the same playbook that they've always done. He just did it really effectively. And it's a really misogynistic town, and the press is very misogynistic, and so is politics, so they all ate it up, right? His protection came from the Democratic Party. He was Hollywood's cult leader, and whatever he said went. And the lengths he went to were so extraordinary and bizarre. And I starred in some weird movies, including one where I had a machine gun light, but living the life I lived during that period, you know, and it was always there intensely. I would go, let's say I went and someone took my photograph at a grocery store, paparazzi. The next day it'd be in the paper with the most slanderous things written about me. And I was like, what is going on? What did I kill all, like, journalist parents back in the day or something and miss it? Why do these people hate me so much all over, like, all these different media outlets? And I couldn't figure it out. And now I know it's because he was buying journalist stories and saying, oh, by the way, here's my hit list. If you ever see Rose McGowan, you know, out anywhere in a photo, drag her, nail her to the wall. And they did, happily. And they did it to others, too. But I was his number one with the red lines for my name. And he stole a lot, you know, because what he did was make everybody think I was crazy for so long that if I simply said I want a tuna sandwich, people would be like, oh, my God, did you hear that crazy bitch? She wants a tuna sandwich. I mean, it's exhausting. Have every single thing you say undermined, undervalued, underappreciated, and not thought about. I can say it's very different for me globally than it is in America. That's where he mostly did all his press dragging. So I have a very different experience when I'm not in America. And America is not my favorite place. And it never has been. It's incredibly beautiful. The first paper I wrote at military school that I was sent to, I got an F on, which I thought was a positive. I didn't know. I was like, I got an F. And they're like, no, that's not good. And the question was, and I remember it, was basically, why is America better than any other country? And I said, my answer was, you're not. You committed genocide for your land and you built your White House off the back of slaves. You need to be better. And I got an F, but I stand by what I said because I'm right. It does deserve, it's like Native American burial ground. Like, people there need to be better. It's like what they did to get what they have and end up with now. It's just, it's so sad and tragic and ugly. And it just doesn't have to be that way. If people can use this cultural reset, if they're not in jeopardy for feeding their kids right now, if they're not in jeopardy for paying their rent, you know, and stressed out of their minds and freaked out, if you have the luxury of time for reflection, I think people should really use this time for their own reset, because when we get out of these doors, we can reintroduce ourselves to the world any way we want. We can now be who we really are without all the trappings of everything that we thought was so important before.
And how did you feel about the Weinstein verdict when he got sentenced to the time that he did?
Shocked. I was in shock. I really, because I know so much behind the scenes stuff, like I know why the DA picked those two cases to prosecute him under, because they're the hardest cases, because he was friends with Weinstein and took donations from and payouts from him, like when he didn't prosecute him before, things like that, right? But these are the people I'm supposed to trust to prosecute him now. But they brought cases that had never been proven in a court of law or anybody had been found guilty of before, which is a case where someone has an ongoing relationship with their rapist. And thank God the jury saw through it. And thank God they were educated enough and unwired enough to see the tactics being used. And they returned the correct judgment. I know, because I was there. He is a rapist. But you still see how the media treats him. And they're like, fallen producer, disgraced producer. No, he's a convicted rapist. And I'll bet you money that if you were writing about a poor black man, you would start that sentence with convicted rapist. And that's what makes me mad.
This is a huge victory for all of us who've ever been hurt, for both of us who have been affected by Harvey Weinstein specifically, and also the greater, you know, the bigger amount of people in the world. This affects so many. But to us specifically, it's a huge moment. And it's one, I have to honestly say, I thought he was going to be exonerated.
I did wonder that, actually, Rose, because the jury had been out for a significant amount of time. And I just wondered whether, because you were outside the court, weren't you, after the verdict, I just wondered whether you had sort of lost hope that you might get the justice that you needed.
Well, I never really had hope, you see. And I realized that the other day when someone asked me, do you have hope that he'll be found guilty? Mm. And I realized the last time I actually had hope was the moment before I was raped by him. And after that, it became survival. And after that, it became this, like, battle in a huge war. I didn't have hope, but not because of the jury. And I'm very grateful to that jury for getting a lot farther than most juries get in rape cases, certainly. And there's something so profound about the amount of corruption behind the scenes. So for me, I was just really worried about, from what I know on the back end of things, it's hard to speak publicly about it because you can't without getting sued. But there is, it's an extraordinary moment, and it's a watershed moment.
A watershed moment, but not the final moment. This journey is really, in some senses, legally just beginning, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. There will be the LA trial, and he's, you know, the court sentencing here is on March 11th. It's a never-ending kind of situation. You do wish, I wish it would end, but this is an unbelievable achievement. Just to simply have a woman who has been raped by somebody be in a court pointing at their accuser saying, you did this to me, that is a privilege because that is incredibly rare. There's a 2% conviction rate in almost all rapes. And that's an astounding number of people that walk free, an astounding number of victims that never get any kind of measure of justice. So I found it that we were winning just by even having it in the court. That's how little we've been taught to expect.
You personally did not exercise that privilege in New York. Are you hoping to do so when the trial starts in Los Angeles?
Yes, but I couldn't exercise the privilege because it didn't happen to me in New York.
But you, I mean, what happened to you was in 1997. Are you still able to take your case to trial?
No, I am not able to. There's a statute of limitations, so I will never have that kind of day in court. But what I can do is kind of an Annabella Sciorra, who was the incredibly brave woman who was also raped by Harvey Weinstein in the 90s. And her testimony was really vital to giving context that this is a long-standing pattern and it's not something that just happened out of the blue.
So will you be able to, even though your case won't go to trial, will you be able to speak in court as a witness?
I don't know if it's as a witness or how they want to couch my credit there, but yes, I would be able to.
You not only were you a victim of Harvey Weinstein personally, in physical sense, you say, but also later you had a long battle because he came after you, didn't he?
He very much came after me. He and his giant machine of other monsters, I don't know how, enablers, you know, people that he paid to do dastardly things that, you know, sound like they're out of a spy novel, but they were my life. And the other night, I have to be honest, I was sitting at home and I was thinking I should do the laundry. And then I thought, oh, I wonder if he gets convicted, if he'll hire a hitman to kill me. Oh, I wonder what I want for dinner. That was just, these are just casual thoughts in my life. And that's what's so wrong and sick. And that's why I have fought so hard for this to stop. But more importantly, I fought for a global cultural reset because this still happens. While we're speaking, people are being raped all over the world. And they will never have a voice in this. So I wanted to come and be a voice for those who'll never get a chance to stand and say to the world, because I have a unique situation in that I can speak to people in the world through a camera, through your show, things like that. And we have to keep and hold the reason that we fight is not just personal, but it's also for, you know, the greater cultural reset that I was looking for.
We spoke to a lawyer who is representing victims here who talked about the pressure of the NDAs that people were having to sign, which meant they couldn't even tell their own husband what had happened to them. They couldn't seek the advice of a therapist because that was prevented under the NDA, and they couldn't go and talk to their priest about it. The sort of the silencing of people who'd been assaulted must be part of the trauma.
You're right, Susanna, and I'm really glad that you are starting to talk and people are starting to talk more about the trauma of all of it, because there is, you know, when you see people and you wonder all of a sudden why they disappear from the screen, or maybe they disappear from their workplace, or their life starts going down the tubes. And can you imagine having something so traumatic and you have to just keep it isolated inside of your own mind and soul and body? That's a brutal form of torture. And that's while the other person goes along merrily with their existence, gets off scot-free.
Do you think there are many more cases which we don't know about, which have yet to come to light?
Yes.
How many?
Do I think there may be on a level of a Harvey Weinstein, who I think probably, if we do the math and do it correctly, he could potentially be one of the biggest serial rapists in history. Because he had a full machine set up only to rape. You know, movies, that was his living, but there was a rape factory. That was what the business was about behind the scenes. Every time he had to make a settlement and make a payout, you know, at the Weinstein Company later, he had to make a payment to the board for $350,000, let's say, if he paid somebody $100,000. So this is the kind of human trafficking that goes on, and it goes on in Hollywood, and it goes on all over the world. And when we think of human trafficking, you know, I think most people think of a street runaway, you know, being prostituted at a truck stop. But in reality, it's in all levels, high levels of society and low levels.
Rose, your book is called Brave, and it recounts a lot of this and the effect of this on you and other women. The reason it's called that is because it takes so much courage to speak out when someone is that powerful. Just explain why it is so hard for individual women to come out publicly and say this happened to me without repercussions, because the repercussions are so damaging, aren't they? I mean, your career collapsed after what happened to you.
Yeah. Immediately collapsed, immediately. And that's it's so unfair. You get punished twice, and then you get punished over and over, and you get punished by strangers and by people that look at you with these kind of knowing looks in their eyes, you know, and it's this kind of, and it lends this kind of paranoid feeling, except for it's not paranoia because it's actually happening. Mm. So for a lot of women, I imagine they would look at, you know, how I was treated, say, in the media, or how many of us have been treated, and say, why would I want to do this? You know, all I can say is, for some, it's extremely important to have a voice when they've been silenced for so long. Others can deal with it by speaking to people in their own life, you know, their clergy, their therapist. There are many different ways, and not everybody, you know, everyone has their own story. And while a lot of our stories are similar, our own life situations are unique to us. And you have to be able to judge for yourself what you're going to be able to handle, because I can tell you it will be the fight of your life.
And how have you survived then over the past 20 years since you started all this? Professionally, you paid a price. You mentioned it affects the way that you think. I mean, how have you got through that time?
You know, I wrote a book called Brave. It's not about Me Too or any of that. It compares... It's a how-to book, essentially. It's a how to be brave. And I use my own life stories as examples. That helped me. I was lonely for a really long time. In the last 4 years, I've made an album and an art project that's coming out called Planet Nine. So I work a lot of things through with my art, but it was incredibly isolating and incredibly lonely. I would go to events in Hollywood and be sat next to, you know, people that I won't name here, and they would simply just turn their face away like I had something they didn't want to catch.
He will be sentenced.
So you get punished.
He'll be sentenced in a few days' time. He possibly will get 29 years in prison for what he did. Is that enough?
Yes. For me personally, I would just rather he cease to exist. I think the world would be better off, but I'm happy there is one less serial predator on the streets, because I can tell you that people would not be safe if he was out. And it's going to have to be enough. For most of us, this is more justice than most will ever see. And so it's an incredible moment. My brain is not at its most succinct today, because it's just this incredible, overwhelming amount of emotions and just this kind of floodgates of stress that are just starting to recede after being so high for so long. But it is, you know, this whole thing is a tragedy. None of this had to happen.
And are there, I mean, one of the reasons also you may not be able to think entirely straight is because it is 3:20 in the morning where you, and we do appreciate where you are, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Are there, though, other people out there now in positions of power in Hollywood and elsewhere who should be feeling nervous this morning?
Absolutely. And I think what this shows is that the old ways of treating, you know, rape victims on the stand in trial by slut-shaming them, by calling them every name in the book. You know, we've all heard it for so long, these kind of tactics. But now, thankfully, juries, I hope, will start to see through it. More laws will be passed, you know, that will help us as a culture start understanding more about what consent means. It's so big. I'm normally quite good with words, but I'm really at a loss because I'm still in shock, I have to tell you the truth. I was really expecting to have to deal with the flood of, is this the end of Me Too, the media narrative running with that, you know? And so I'm kind of spun right now, but I can tell you the young girl that I was is giving a high five to the woman I am today.
And that's what makes me mad. If the media really, the mainstream media, the corporate media, there's huge damage. Like today in the Washington Post, they have Trump allies support Tara Reid. So I guess I'm a Trump ally now? I didn't know that. Thanks. No, I'm just an ally for truth, you dickheads.
So you're talking about the...
But I'm happy because right now I feel like for the first time in 22 years, it's not a feeling, it's a fact. I have a big 350-pound man's foot off the back of my neck because he was holding me down for so many years.
So you're
and I could feel the weight of him and the terror of him. Mm-hmm. And I'm free.
So you're talking about the call that you've been having for support, to support Tara Reid and regarding Joe Biden's run for office?
Correct. I know it's inconvenient, but it's the truth, so there we go. You don't get to pick and choose. You don't get to be like, this guy, I know him, so he must not be a rapist. It doesn't work that way. Oh, really? Were you in the hallway with him at that moment? No? Shut up. Do I wish Biden wasn't a rapist? Do I wish he was a good man? Absolutely. Do I believe he's a rapist? Absolutely.
Former Vice President Joe Biden addressed the sexual misconduct allegations against him on Morning Joe. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Okay, let's bring in the apparent Democratic nominee for president, former Vice President Joe Biden. Mr. Vice President, thank you for coming on the show this morning. We have we want to ask you this morning. Okay. Joe and Willie will join in just a moment for questions on how you would handle this pandemic, the campaign, and other news of the day. But at the start, it's just going to be you and me, and I want to get right to the allegation made against you by Tara Reid. So the former Senate aide accuses you of sexual assault. And please, to our viewers, please excuse the graphic nature of this, but I want to make sure that there is no question as to what we're talking about. She says in 1993, Mr. Vice President, that you pinned her against the wall and reached under her clothing and penetrated her with your fingers. Would you please go on the record with the American people? Did you sexually assault Tara Reid?
No, it is not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never, never happened. And it didn't. It never happened.
Do you remember her? Do you remember any types of complaints that she might have made?
I don't remember any type of complaint she may have made. It was 27 years ago. And I don't remember, nor does anyone else that I'm aware of. And the fact is that I don't remember. I don't remember any complaint ever having been made.
Have you or your campaign, have you reached out to her?
No, I have not reached out to her. It's 27 years ago. This never happened. And when she first made the claim, we made it clear that it never happened. And that's as simple as that.
In the past 30 minutes or so, you released a statement on Medium, and among other things, you write this. There's only one place a complaint of this kind could be, the National Archives. I am requesting that the Secretary of State ask of the Senate, ask the archives to identify any record of the complaint she alleges she filed. If there was any such complaint, the record will be there. Are you preparing us for a complaint that might be revealed in some way? Are you confident there is nothing?
I'm confident there's nothing. No one ever brought it to the attention of me 27 years ago. This is any assertion at all. No one that I'm aware of in my campaign, my Senate office at the time, is aware of any such request and or any such complaint. And so I'm not worried about it at all. If there is a complaint, that's where it would be. That's where it would be filed. And if it's there, put it out, but I've never seen it. No one has that I'm aware of.
The New York Times has investigated this exhaustively. They didn't find any of your former staff members were able to corroborate the details of this allegation. She did file a police report a few weeks ago with the D.C. police. But since you want to set the record straight, why limit this only to Tara Reid? Why not release any complaints that it may had been made against you during your Senate career?
I'm prepared to do that. The best of my knowledge, there's been no complaints made against me in terms of my Senate career, in terms of my office and anything's been run. Look, this is an open book. There's nothing for me to hide. Nothing at all.
You were unequivocal, Mr. Vice President, back in 2018 during the Kavanaugh controversy and hearings. And you said that women should be believed. You said this: for a woman to come forward in the glaring lights of focus nationally, you've got to start off with the presumption that at least the essence of what she is talking about is real. Whether or not she forgets the facts, whether or not it's been made worse or better over time. She's going to be going on national television on Sunday. Tara Reid is coming forward in the glaring lights. To use your words, should we not start off with the presumption that the essence of what she's talking about is real? She says you sexually assaulted her.
Look, from the very beginning, I've said believing women means taking the woman's claim seriously when she steps forward and then vet it, look into it. That's true in this case as well. Women have a right to be heard, and the press should rigorously investigate claims they make. I'll always uphold that principle. But in the end, in every case, the truth is what matters. And in this case, the truth is the claims are false.
Is it possible these claims are held in an NDA? Do you have any NDAs that have been signed by women who were employed by you?
There is no NDA sign, and no one's ever signed. I've never asked anybody to sign an NDA. There are no NDAs, period, in my case. None.
Your Senate documents at the University of Delaware were supposed to go public, and then they were resealed. The access was changed. I know that you're saying any HR complaints could be in the National Archives, but why not reveal your Senate documents that are being held in Delaware? I know there's 1,800-plus boxes, but if she believes and she alleges that the complaints may be hidden there, why not strive for complete transparency? Why was the access to those documents sealed up when they were supposed to be revealed?
Well, they weren't supposed to be revealed. I gave them the university. The university said it's going to take them time to go through all the boxes. They said it wouldn't be, and that wouldn't be before 2020 that occurred, or 2021. I can't remember the year they said. But look, a record like this can only be one place. It would not be at the University of Delaware. My archives do not contain personal files. My archives contain documents, and I said, when I say personal, personnel files. They don't contain any personnel files. They are public records, my speeches, my papers, my position papers. And if that document existed, it would be stored in the National Archives, where documents from the office she claims to have filed her complaint with are stored. That's where they are stored. The Senate controls those archives. So I'm asking the Secretary of the Senate today to identify whether any such document exists. If it does, make it public.
Right. But there are claims and concerns and reports in Business Insider, and she claims that possibly a complaint or some sort of record of this might be at the University of Delaware. So for complete transparency, why not push for the release of any documents with Tara Reid's name on them, whether it's at the University of Delaware or the National Archives?
First of all, let's get this straight. There are no personnel documents. But you can't do that. You wouldn't, for example, if you worked with me or I worked for you and you had my income tax returns, you had my whatever. They're private documents. They're not for the they don't get put out in the public. So they're not part of the public record. That in fact is that any senator or vice president or president has in their documents. Look, there was one place that she could file the complaint, and the plaintiff, and that office at the time was all those records from that office are in the archives, and they're controlled by the Senate. That's where personnel documents would be if they exist. That's where the complaint would be if it exists.
Given the fact that you have said in the past that if a woman goes under the lights and talks about something like this, we have to consider that the essence of this is real. Is the essence of what she is saying is real? Why do you think she's doing this?
I'm not going to question her motive. I'm not going to get into that at all. I don't know why she's saying this. I don't know why after 27 years, all of a sudden this gets raised. I don't understand it. But I'm not going to go in and question her motive. I'm not going to attack her. She has a right to say whatever she wants to say. But I have a right to say, look at the facts. Check it out. Find out whether any of what she says is asserted or true. And based on the investigations that have taken place so far, to the best of my knowledge, by two major papers, they interviewed dozens of my staff members, not just senior staff, but staff members, I'm told. At least that's what they said. And yes. Nobody. This was not the atmosphere in my office at all. No one has ever said anything like this.
But, Mr. Vice President, as it pertained to Dr. Ford, everyone wanted, high-level Democrats said she should be believed, that they believed it happened. You said if someone like Dr. Ford were to come out, the essence of what she is saying has to be believed, has to be real.
No.
Why?
And no, what I said, it has to
Why
be.
Why is it real for Dr. Ford, but not for Tara Reid?
Because the facts are that, look, I'm not suggesting she had no right to come forward. And I'm not saying any woman, they should come forward. They should be heard. And then it should be investigated. It should be investigated. And if there's anything that makes it, that is consistent with what's being said, and she makes the case or the case is made, then it should be believed. But ultimately, the truth matters. The truth matters. It's period. I fought my entire life to change the whole notion of the law and the cultural sexual around the culture around sexual assault. And I fought to strengthen and protect the process for survivors. I believe we've come a long way, and we have a long way to go in this system before we, in fact, are in a position that there's a fair and unbiased view. But at the end of the day, it has to be looked at. These claims are not true. There's no cooperation. I mean, they're not true.
Mr. Vice President,
I don't know what else I can say to you.
Well, I'm going to try and ask many different ways. Stacey Abrams said during the Kavanaugh hearings, I believe women. I believe survivors of assault should be supported and their voices heard. Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted, do we believe women? Do we give them the opportunity to tell their story? We must be a country that says yes every time. They now both support you. Nancy Pelosi falls into this category, too, as well as many other leaders in the Democratic Party. Are women to be believed? Are women to be believed unless it pertains to you?
Look, women are to be believed given the benefit of the doubt. If they come forward and say something that they said happened to them, they should start off with the presumption they're telling the truth. Then you have to look at the circumstances and the facts. And the facts in this case do not exist. They never happened. And there's so many inconsistencies in what has been said in this case. So yes, look at the facts. And I assure you, it did not happen. Period. Period.
But why is it different now? Do you regret what you said during the Kavanaugh hearings?
What I said during the Kavanaugh hearings was that she had a right to be heard. And the fact that she came forward, the presumption would be she's telling the truth unless it's proved she wasn't telling the truth. Or not proved, unless it's clear from the facts surrounding it, it's not the truth.
As we...
Look, this is a very... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Please. No, that's all.
As we await for the records from the National Archives, are you absolutely certain, are you absolutely positive there is no record of any complaint by Tara Reid against you?
I am absolutely positive that no one that I'm aware of ever has been made aware of any complaint, a formal complaint made by or a complaint by Tara Reid against me at the time this allegedly happened 27 years ago or until I announced for press. Well, I guess it was in April or May of this year. I know of no one who's aware that any complaint was made.
How does your relationship stand now with Alyssa Milano? Have you stayed in touch over the years since Charmed?
We never really had a relationship. You know, we worked together. And I'm sure everyone's worked with people that they don't care for. I did my job. I acquitted myself well. As sisters on TV, we loved each other. Privately, we're extremely different humans with extremely different ethics. I've known this person for a long time. You know, she said something when she was talking to Andy Cohen the other day. It was absurd. She's like, I took a long time to talk about Harvey Weinstein. What do you have to do with it? Like nothing. You have nothing to do with Harvey Weinstein. No one cares about your opinions on Harvey Weinstein, most especially me. It's just stuff like that. It's just the ego-driven mentality of, and to lie basically and say like, I can't believe Me Too is going after innocent men. They're like, no, that's a media driven conspiracy theory. It's people rising up and be like, oh my God, I don't have to take this. You're so right. And if we do get the one toxic person out at our workplace, we'll all be better for it and someone good can come in. Haven't we all worked at a place where you're like, God, if this one dickhead wasn't there, life would sure be great at work. We'll get rid of the dickhead. It's not that hard.
So you had criticized Time's Up prior, and there it came out that
I did, but I found they actually right.
Yeah, she tried to but go that was to them to get help, and they weren't able to help her.
Well, kind of. It's a little more complicated with Time's Up. I've actually, you know, had kind of a complex relationship with that. But there is a lot of behind the scenes really good work that they actually do, and I've been surprised by that. And I was surprised by the level of commitment to indigent women that need help, and they do a lot of really good work. The Tara Reid thing, they felt like because he's the presumptive nominee, they would jeopardize their nonprofit status. So, but they still have Tara on their website and are helping her find if any other attorneys want to help her, things like that. They're just giving funding things. And she's not asking for money. She actually doesn't, Tara, like, she just wants him to drop out of the race and not be president. But, you know, so Time's Up, I have a tricky relationship with because of how they're formed, but then ultimately I've seen them do good work. And I have to give them that, you know? But originally, how it was formed left a really bad taste in my mouth. The people wearing black dresses at the Oscars or Golden Globes or whatever left a really bad taste in my mouth. You know, no movement, no cultural shift has ever happened from dresses. None. I can pretty much say that.
Yeah, that was the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, yeah.
Now, since Time's Up, they are, like you were saying, they're making more of a, giving an opportunity for her to seek representation, so you're married.
So Alyssa kind of, yeah, Alyssa, when she put out, was talking to Andy Cohen, she said that Time's Up had vetted her and turned her down. That's not true. So it made it seem like, oh, I have the proof she's a liar, Time's Up said so. That's not true. That's a misstatement.
And there may be a possibility that Harvey Weinstein may be able to, because of what's going on now with the COVID-19 outbreak, he may be tried to request to be released? Like, how would you feel if something like that were to go through, especially for the victims that he...
I would ask that every single prisoner be released at that point, because I guarantee you he's got high up friends still. And that's why he's been able to go to the hospital so much, because he prefers that to being in prison. And he does get special treatment, and I would feel disgusted and enraged.
Rose McGowan spoke about her former Charmed co-star, Alyssa Milano, on Bevy Smith's SiriusXM show, Bevelations.
You know, you have been fighting for women, but now you're actually fighting with some women. You on Twitter, you actually called Alyssa Milano out for not supporting Tara Reid, who has accused Joe Biden of rape, and you called Oprah fake, and you called Gloria Steinem a fake, and things like that. Have you spoken to any of these women privately?
No, I don't want to. The whole thing is, when Tarana Burke graciously and smartly created a communication tool, because that's what Me Too is. I am not Me Too. I always say I qualify as a Me Too. I am a Me Too. I'm not Me Too. My book was released during when the Me Too hashtag kicked off. I was on all these interviews, right? And like Alyssa, and a lot of people just kind of jumped on the train. And, she said something recently in an Andy Cohen interview, like, if you remember, I took a long time to speak out on Harvey. I'm like, what the hell did you have to do with Harvey? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing. Shut up.
Yeah.
And to do that whole, that kind of misogynoir gaslighting of the public, I just won't stand for it. There are false prophets out here, and people can see through it, but it's the quote unquote little people that see through it. The people who forge on Twitter, right? Or Instagram. I don't like sacred cows. I don't like people that are held up to be better than other people. And I don't like people that don't really do the right thing and behind the scenes are aiding and abetting alleged criminals. I just don't. And I won't stand for it. Thing is not for women, actually. It's for humans, because boys get hurt so much and then they turn around and they hurt. So that's kind of where we almost need to start. And my thing is, if we could get men to see women as human and women to see themselves as human and then men to see themselves as human, we could back up instead of going deeper into the gender divide. If we can back up to recognize our humanity, we might be able to solve this.
Thanks for tuning in. You can listen to the Be Inside TV podcast on Spotify, Anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and everywhere that podcasts are found.
Inside TV.